Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Tuesday Night Jaw on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, your host, Jim Smallman. Hope you're all well. Sorry for the slight delay this week. We're a day late because of jet lag. For reasons that you're probably aware of if you listened to last week's episode. If you haven't listened to last week's episode, we've had loads of great feedback from me and John and Glenn talking about Progress's adventures in New York and Boston and also our time at TakeOver and SummerSlam as well. We've had loads of feedback of people just saying to us, oh God, it's hard being a wrestling promoter, isn't it? Yes, those few days were very hard, but we still love being wrestling promoters. And now we're back. We got through our show on Sunday. And jet lag is pretty much still affecting my brain, so apologies if I stutter every now and again or if I appear to just drift off and stare into space. That's why, jet lag. So apologies for the delay. Thanks for being patient. Obviously, do check out everything on the Distraction Pieces Network, for it is all good. A couple of little plugs I need to do. First off, we're a week and a bit away from the live Tuesday Night Jaw at the London Podcast Festival, Saturday, September the 9th. Saturday September the 9th at noon at King's Place in London. There's loads of wrestling podcasts going on that day. I'm the first one in the big room, which is really cool. I'm doing that, and then I'm going off to do the Twitch preview of the Progress show at Alexandra Palace on the Sunday, which is already completely sold out. So I'm doing that preview, I think 4 p.m. Across town in London. I'll tweet details of that later in the week. So yeah, if you want to come to the live podcast, a load of you already are, it'd be great to see even more of you. I know it's early in the day, I know it's a Saturday, I know a lot of you have already, thank you very much, spent your money on coming to Alexandra Palace to see Progress, but I would love to see some of you there. I'll high five all of you, we'll all hang out, we'll have a natter, we are going to decide the ultimate wrestling card of all time. Next week's podcast, I'll give you a little bit of a help in terms of what you need to be thinking about coming along so we can have a big old debate. But we only get an hour and a half. So we're going to have to start bang on time and then probably finish the discussion in the pub with all of you afterwards. So if you want to come to that, I'd love to see you there. It's kingsplace.co.uk/TNJLive. Once again, kingsplace.co.uk/TNJLive. Please come along. It'll be great. Guests confirmed so far. Me, I'm the host. Gotta be there. Kind of important. Business partner Glenn Joseph. He's definitely going to be there. Regular host Matt Richards, he's going to be there, and the wonderful Mr. Scroobius Pip, he's going to be there. Distraction Pieces Network is his thing. He's the reason this podcast exists, so we couldn't do it without having him there, so he'll be there as well. So it's us four, probably going to announce another guest or two as well, but we're going to have a good time, and I'd like to see you all there. So remember, kingsplace.co.uk/TNJLive. Also, I promised for ages that I'd have merch. I now have merch. I have the Cheer Faces Boo Heels t-shirts, which loads of you have received this week. Loads of you pre-ordered it. They're now in stock. You can order them now. You will get them now. Thanks to my lovely friends at Backstreet Merch who do all that stuff for me. I don't have a house full of merch. My wife wouldn't allow me. So, yeah, if you want one of those t-shirts, I've not got loads of them, so don't hang about. JimSmallman.com/TNJ. Go along there. And you'll see there's a link not only to the live podcast, and not only is there links so you can point everybody in the direction of how to get involved with this podcast in the first place, but there is a link to my web store so you can go and buy those t-shirts. They're proving very popular. I haven't gotten one myself yet. I should probably do that. Should probably ask if I can have one before they all go. But yeah, jimsmallman.com/TNJ. Get yourself a Cheer Faces Boo Heels t-shirt, and you are supporting this podcast, which I am very grateful to you for. So cheers for that. Right, last couple of little plugs. ProgressWrestling.com for your progress tickets/merchandise. Demand-progress.com for Progress Wrestling shows, all of them that we've done ever. Going up this week will probably be the New York show that we spoke about last week, the Boston show that we spoke about last week, and the show from this past Sunday, which is our big lead-in show that sets everything up for Alexandra Palace. Very excited about the Alexandra Palace show. So unbelievably excited to do a wrestling show in front of 2,000 people, which is pretty sweet. Also, this week, I slept through the tickets going on sale for our show at the end of October. We have 6 weeks off between our show at Alexandra Palace on our next show, which is at the end of October. Tickets went on sale for it this week. I woke up, thought, oh, tickets will go on sale soon, fell asleep. Half an hour later, woke up, they'd all gone. So thanks. Thanks for your support. If you're a Progress fan, thanks for your support. If you've never been to a Progress show and you don't understand why I bang on about it all the time, that's totally fine too. Everyone's allowed to like what they like in wrestling. But the support we've had for Progress over this year has been tremendous. I'm aware I say tremendous a lot. I say literally a lot and tremendous a lot. I know this. My wife points it out to me quite a lot. I apologise. They're the plugs out of the way. This is a list episode. I wanted to do something about women in wrestling for various reasons that I'll talk about in a sec. And it's a list I've wanted to put together for quite some time now. If you want to get involved and send me your list, do what we normally do for a list episode. There's no real crazy rules on this one because it's a list of wrestlers rather than a list of matches. So just send me a list. Maybe write it in notes on your phone, screenshot it and tweet it to me. At Jim Smallman, use the hashtag TuesdayNightJaw. Now, I like women's wrestling, and I'm aware for a long time when we started running Progress, people thought I didn't like women's wrestling because we didn't have women's wrestling on our shows. Now, I think I've explained this before, but one of the reasons for this was we always wanted to make sure that people reacted to it in the right way. Now, you know, if you've ever been to a Progress show, you know the atmosphere at our shows is lively. And one of my biggest fears when we first started would be that our fans wouldn't react to women's wrestling in the right way, and we'd get people shouting out derogatory stuff and things like that. Now, it was a completely unfounded fear because our fans are awesome. And as we've grown as a company, I've realised how awesome our fans are, and that would never need to be a problem. And indeed, the first time we ever had a women's match on one of our main chapter shows, the respect and brilliance of our fans just underline that we should firstly have done it sooner, but also that our fans are absolutely tremendous. And that's not the sort of thing you necessarily need to worry about in 2017. Certainly it was 2015 when we first did it, but you know, that's not the sort of thing you need to worry about these days. A women's wrestling at the minute is brilliant. The era of divas and women who, you know, still awesome, but being booked to wrestle not because they were great wrestlers, but because of how they looked. Well, that's past now. And what we've gone into is this, we've a whole generation of female wrestlers who are, you know, as brilliant as the men are, without absolutely without a shadow of a doubt. And it's to the point now where WWE Network this week debuted the Mae Young Classic. Now, there's loads of people in the Mae Young Classic who we know from Progress or people that we're aware of and know are brilliant. And you think the Mae Young Classic is something that's happening and is not, including people who are on NXT TV. And there's loads of great female talent in NXT TV. There's loads of great women on Raw and on SmackDown. There's loads of great women in Progress. And it's just a really, really exciting time. So I want to bring all that up, and that's all really positive. But also something really negative happened in women's wrestling this week, and it's something I tweeted about yesterday. And this concerns two wrestlers. One is Rosemary, who you may well know from TNA, who I think is great. And another one is a Mexican wrestler called Sexy Star. Now, this is a very positive podcast, and I don't like speaking ill of anybody. But this week I got asked if, you know, as a wrestling promoter, would you boycott Sexy Star from working for you because of what happened this past weekend? And absolutely 100% yes, I would. Yeah, it was unlikely she would ever work for us anyway, but she will definitely never work for us now. If you're unfamiliar with what happened this week, this weekend, pretty much the same time as the McGregor-Mayweather fight, was Triple Mania in Mexico. Huge, huge Lucha Libre show. And by all accounts, apart from this one incident, a great show. You know, the main event, which featured Dr. Wagner, who I mentioned on my top 10 list of wrestlers who've not appeared in WWE. The main event was apparently great. The whole show was apparently great fun, apart from this one incident, which is Sexy Star, who has a legitimate fighting background, decided to put a shoot armbar on Rosemary and popped her arm out of the socket. Now, at the time, it looked like it was going to be a really bad injury. Rosemary's updated everybody since and said, you know, it's not as bad as first thought. Be out for a bit, but I'll be back. And I was doing something yesterday, just like anyone who's got any decency around independent wrestling, just encouraging people to go to Rosemary's Pro Wrestling Tees store and buy her merch if you've got a spare few quid. Because, you know, if you're out injured for a while, like our friend TK Cooper is, you need to encourage people to go out and help these guys live when they can't make a living. Same for me. If you know, I'm only a stand-up comedian. If I break my leg, I can't do stand-up and I can't pay my bills. So for wrestlers, you know, if something bad happens to them, and they're, as a rule, most people in wrestling are pretty cool people, you know, go out of your way to support them. But I just found this incident was... It was really distasteful, and it came at a time when women's wrestling is so popular and so vibrant and so hot that I thought, you know what, I want to draw attention to women that I admire in wrestling, and I'm going to put together my top 10 list of what I think are the top 10 greatest female wrestlers of all time. Now, this is coloured by my own personal preference. You'll see why when I start doing the list. So... compared to when I normally do these lists, I don't normally do many honourable mentions. I'm going to do a load of honourable mentions before I even get into the top 10. And I'm still probably going to have forgotten someone, which is why you guys do your top 10 and you tweet it to me, at Jim Smallman, hashtag Tuesday Night Jaw. So, here's the honourable mentions I'm going to do before I get into my top 10 women wrestlers of all time. So, honourable mentions to current WWE performers, such as Alexa Bliss, who I think is tremendous. Her characterisation is wonderful, and in particular the main event on Raw this week, which was, again, and this is how wrestling has moved on. A women's match was the main event of Raw this week, and it was brilliant. And Alexa Bliss, you know, spoilers if you've not seen it yet, but Alexa Bliss regaining her women's title. So Alexa Bliss is brilliant. Bayley is brilliant. Ember Moon is tremendous, and Ember Moon and someone else who's at the WWE Performance Center at the minute, in Dakota Kai, who appeared on our shows in New York and Boston, they are going to be 2-3 years down the line, they are going to be mega stars. Ember and Dakota are both great. You've got absolute legends that aren't on my list, and legends that I know pushed forward the world of women's wrestling tremendously. So Medusa from WCW / Alundra Blaze when she was in WWE isn't on my list. I know she's great. Loads of her stuff in the mid-90s was brilliant. Trish Stratus isn't on my list because I just couldn't find a place for her. I know that someone like Trish Stratus started in WWE because of her looks and her fitness model background, but she clearly got into the wrestling and her quality of matches got better and better and better and better, and she was always a great role model for not just women's wrestling but wrestling as a whole. And I know that she's certainly an inspiration to a lot of the current generation of women wrestlers. I've not included obvious trailblazers, people like Mae Young, who's obviously got the Mae Young Classic named after her, the Fabulous Moolah, who was WWE Women's Champion for an eternity, Mildred Burke, who was one of the first sort of trailblazers for women's wrestling back in the 1950s. And I haven't included anyone from the current indie crop. So again, Deonna Purrazzo, who appeared for us in New York and Boston and is brilliant, has got a great future ahead of her. Candice LeRae, who I've been a fan of for a long time, certainly from her PWG days, she's brilliant. She's not on the list. Then you've got all the women who are in progress at the minute. For example, Toni Storm, our women's champion, who is, if you think about it, she's 21 years old. It's ridiculous how good she's going to be by the time she's brilliant now. How good she's going to be by the time she's 25 is just hard to even comprehend. Dahlia Black, Ginny, Laura DiMatteo, and there's certain Japanese legends that aren't on this list either. So Bull Nakano, Lioness Asuka, Chigusa Nagoya are not on this list. And they're all brilliant. Genuinely, out of all those honourable mentions, I mean, there's probably, I've probably given you, what, 20 names there? 10 of them could have been in my top 10. So that's how hard this is. If your expectation and your appreciation of women's wrestling is just of what it was during the Attitude Era, and you've switched off to what it is now because of what it was in the Attitude Era, then you need to open your eyes to what it is at the minute. And certainly, it's going to be one particular nation, one particular time period I'm going to bang on about a lot. Go onto the internet and find some of this stuff, because there's women's wrestling out there that will blow your mind. I think I've said this on the podcast before. Most head-dropping indie moves were invented by Japanese women in the mid-1990s. If you don't believe me, go and look for yourself, because trust me, there's some amazing stuff. Back then, Dave Meltzer gave so many 5-star matches out to women's wrestling from All Japan Women's in the mid-1990s. It's genuinely crazy. Maybe talking about that a little bit during the course of the top 10. So anyway, I want to know what your top 10 is. Your top 10 female wrestlers of all time. Then just tweet me. Write a list, do a snapshot of the list, and then just send me the picture. At Jim Smallman on Twitter, hashtag Tuesday Night Jaw. Okay, into my list, and I prepared quite well for this, mainly because of jet lag. I can't riff like I normally riff. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. Jet lag, how do you get around jet lag? This is a genuine question. If you've got a decent solution to jet lag, let me know. I'm not tired, I just feel ill. And I'm not ill. I just feel my body doesn't know when to eat and stuff. It's odd. I've travelled to America. This is my third trip to America this year. Third trip to America this year. And I just... do not feel good. Do not feel good, guys. Apologies. Right then. Number 10 on my list. I have chosen a tag team. Which, again, in tag team wrestling and women's wrestling... tag teams in women's wrestling are more unusual. Partly because and we have this sort of issue with progress shows, is if we have a 7-match card, there's one, maybe two women's matches on the show. I know you're thinking, oh, but you very rarely have two women's matches. Well, in Endeavour, we often did have two women's matches. And, slight spoiler, in Boston, we would have had two women's matches if we'd have not had injury problems. We were planning on doing it. So it's harder to give a female tag team a push if there's not necessarily anything for them to sort of go on. However, the tag team I'm going to mention they're one of the reasons that I got into a certain aspect of women's wrestling. So number 10 on my list of top 10 female wrestlers of all time, the Jumping Bomb Angels, Naoya Tateno and Itsuki Yamazaki. Now, way back when I got into wrestling, I had a friend called Richard from school whose parents were divorced. Therefore, he had all the WWE Coliseum videos. And he once lent me the 1988 Royal Rumble. So on this, there was a 2 out of 3 falls match, which was the Jumping Bomb Angels, who already had a great name. If you're a kid and you hear there's a tag team called the Jumping Bomb Angels, you are on board. And they beat the Glamour Girls, Judy Martin and Lilani Kai. Now, this match, it's still great now. You go and watch it. It's on the network. It's still great now. It was mind-blowing back then. Mind-blowing. Like, they were doing stuff that the dudes didn't do. And the Glamour Girls, you know, they were great as well. But the Jumping Bomb Angels were just ridiculously good. And this was for the women's tag team title as well, which, you know, is not something they have now. But back then was just super, super cool. And when I started getting into tape trading at the end of the 90s, the reason I started seeking out Japanese women's wrestling was partly because I'd heard it was good, but partly because I remembered being a kid and seeing the Jumping Bomb Angels and how brilliant they were. And again, it's rare that a match that is nearly 30 years old will hold up as well as it does. But trust me, go and watch this on the network. You will thank me for it. Royal Rumble 1988, 2 out of 3 falls match. But the Jumping Bomb Angels were great. They were doing mind-blowing stuff back then. And they were a gateway into how great women's wrestling could be in my appreciation of it. So, you know, go and check them out. Number 9. Certainly considered an icon of women's wrestling, and that is Lita. Now, I remember her in ECW, it was Miss Congeniality, but she was more of a valet. Then she was managing S.A. Rios in WWE, and then moved on to managing the Hardy Boys and her involvement with Edge and stuff like that. I think what was most amazing was, I love a moonsault. This comes from me being a great Muta fan back in the day and liking Vader, and I've just always liked moonsaults. And I remember the first time I saw Lita do a moonsault on WWE TV, and I remember thinking, oh, hang on a minute. And I think what was interesting with Lita is she'd often be involved with wrestling the guys in the same way that, again, someone who's not on this list is China. Now, I appreciate the role that China had in women in wrestling and being a woman in wrestling, but I didn't see her as, even though she was a WWE Women's Champion, I never saw her really as, she was always more pushed as part of the male scene and being, you know, Intercontinental Champion and her involvement in Eddie Guerrero and stuff like that. She was always pushed more in that regard, whereas Lita both did stuff with the guys, but was definitely a much firmer part, in my eyes, of the women's division. And I think as well, just her overall style and stuff like that, you can't argue that she certainly influenced so many people in the current generation. I know that if there's women who work for Progress, for example, if there's ever a chance for them to meet Lita or something like that, it's the sort of thing they would absolutely jump at, because for, you know, if you're a 20, 21-year-old female wrestler now, you probably watched Lita when you were a kid and massively looked up to her, because there was just something a bit different about her. I think as well, the fact that she wasn't the sort of stereotypical sort of blonde girl that often WWE employed back in the day. You know, and she was into punk music, and she, you know, she did cool stuff and all that, and had an involvement with the Hardy Boys, who were hot as anything. I think just sort of made her stand out a little bit. But again, just there's... there's going to be people that I go through later in the list who were certainly technically better wrestlers than her, but I think her influence in the world of wrestling is really, really cool. And of course, you know, she's been involved in some great matches, both herself and with the Hardy Boys. And I think her feud with Trish Stratus, which I've not, obviously I mentioned Trish, she was an honourable mention, but her feud with Trish Stratus was really, really good in a time when that wasn't necessarily what WWE was about when it came to women's wrestling. So, you know, I think Lita's cool. Right. Number eight. And again, my Japanese pronunciation is going to suck because I'm from the Midlands. But number eight is Kyoko Inoue. Kyoko was the first woman to win a men's singles title in Japan. A lot further after it ever happened in the United States, I believe. Kyoko Inoue was involved in a ton of five-star matches between 1992 and 1995, as well, and this is a point I mentioned before, is having some of the sickest moves in wrestling history. The Niagara Driver, which is a sit-out one-shoulder powerbomb, and the Victoria Driver, which is an inverted Death Valley Driver. Just imagine those for a second. I'll wait. There's videos of them on YouTube, by the way, if you want to go and look. That's tremendous stuff. She was also in a great tag team called the Inoues with Takako Inoue. They're not related. And there, if you want to check out one match in particular, just to illustrate how great Kyoko was, check out their tag match with Cutie Suzuki and Mayumi Ozaki from April the 2nd, 1993, which is a Dave Meltzer five-star match from All Japan Women's Wrestling. It's so good. So many great matches. But All Japan Women and All Japan Men's Wrestling in the mid-90s is pretty much the pinnacle of what professional wrestling can be. And some of the stuff back in All Japan Women's was just mind-blowing. You know, great though women's wrestling is at the minute, it's going to take some topping that period. You know, there's every reason we can try and do it, but whoa, that was a good period. But yeah, try and check out that tag match if you can. But there's loads of Kyoko Inoue's work that is really, really good from that sort of 92-95 period. Just some really, really tremendous stuff in there. You know, anything you can check out, go and check out. I would heartily recommend it. And then we bridge the gap between Japan and America for number seven in my list. Number seven in my list is amazing / awesome Kong / Karma. So do you remember when Kong, as Karma, entered the 2012 Royal Rumble match? Like, she'd been away for a bit. She'd had a son, I believe, a few months before. So she'd been hired by WWE, then disappeared from WWE for a while, and then came back. Her only competitive match in WWE was the 2012 Royal Rumble. And I remember losing my mind when she came out. Absolutely losing my mind. So cool when she came out. I think I was watching that with John Briley from Progress a few months before our first ever show. It was so cool when she came out, because Kong's been one of my favourite, not just favourite women wrestlers, but one of my favourite wrestlers for a long time. Her stuff in Japan was brilliant. Her stuff in the indies was brilliant. And her work in TNA was great. I don't talk about TNA a lot on this podcast. There's some good stuff from TNA. The three-way match between AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels and Samoa Joe is a great match that everyone should go and watch. They've also done a lot of stuff that isn't brilliant. One thing they did get right for a long time was their knockouts division. And one of the main reasons it was right is because they had the renamed, rebranded Awesome Kong as part of that division, absolutely murdering people. When I went to a TNA house show with Chris Brooker in Coventry years ago, the day before the Noah show that was in the same venue, the Sky Dome in Coventry, I watched Awesome Kong against Gail Kim, and it's one of my favourite matches I've ever watched live. It was brilliantly put together. And again, Gail Kim, someone else who's not on this list, someone else who is brilliant at her job, tremendous at her job. Also, it's worth noting that Awesome Kong's story is inspiring. Full details of it, listen to Colt Cabana's Art of Wrestling episode with her, because it's great. She moved herself to Japan because she really wanted to throw herself into wrestling, and learned Japanese and got taught MMA and stuff like that, and went from being a very different sort of person in her early life to being an absolute ass kicker as a wrestler. So again, I think, you know, it's a shame her WWE run didn't really work out, but, you know, don't think it's necessarily over for her. You know, Mickie James, again, someone else is not on this list. If someone else is great, if Mickie James can end up in WWE, then, you know, or back in WWE rather, why can't Awesome Kong? But, you know, let's maybe call her Awesome or Amazing Kong and not Karma. You know, nothing wrong with the name Karma, but maybe let's, I just like the word Kong. It's a great word. So to number six, speaking of Kongs, this is a brilliant segue, guys. I'm not going to lie. Speaking of Kongs, so Amazing Kong got her start in Japan with a company called Gaia, where she was replacing Aya Kong. Now, she replaced her because Aya Kong was out for a bit. Then she had a match against Aya Kong, and then she teamed with her as W Kong. So Aya Kong is my sixth choice. Aya is the founder of Arsion, Hyper Fighting Arsion, I think is the full name of it, which is an all-women's promotion, and has a history of tremendous matches in All Japan Women's in the 1990s. This is worth noting, and just as a little sidebar here, maybe one of the reasons that Japanese women's wrestling was so good in the 90s was that it had its own promotions that were on pretty much the same footing as men's wrestling. They attracted maybe not quite as big crowds, but pretty similar sized crowds, had a similar sort of schedule. So, you know, maybe that's one of the reasons. And again, if you look at the people I'm going to talk on this list who maybe come through the independents, there's certain independents that run all women's shows that are giving everyone the chance to shine. You know, one of the problems if you've got a mixed roster of male and female talent is that you've got to try and get everybody on. And often the male talent, you know, rightly or wrongly, takes precedent. And, you know, maybe one of the reasons that Japanese women's wrestling was so strong was because it had those separate promotions. But then you led into the question of, well, should we split up male and female wrestling? And then you get into the question of, should we have intergender wrestling and stuff like that, which is something I have to answer on Twitter quite a lot when I do Q&As, is, you know, why don't you have intergender matches and progress shows? And it's like, well, because some people really like them, and some people see them as, you know, as a quality action, and some people see them as distasteful, and it's a really difficult balance to strike. I went off on a little bit of a tangent there, but you know, it's just to do with the fact that there's a lot more women specific companies in Japan running at a higher level than there is in the West, and I just think that's interesting. So, Aya Kong, history of tremendous matches once again in All Japan Women in the 90s. For example, her pursuit of Bull Nakano to end her 3-year title reign in 1992 is an absolutely brilliant highlight. Aya Kong's ethnicity is worth mentioning as well, in that she is mixed race. I believe her mother is Japanese and her father is African American. And apparently, from stuff I've read about her, it meant that when she started out, she suffered, certainly in the late 80s, she suffered a bit of abuse for it. And she, again, she's a very positive role model, someone who, you know, never let that overcome her and really went on to become one of the biggest stars in women's wrestling history. She was also in WWE for a little while. 1995 made her Survivor Series debut. Again, go and watch this on the network. Survivor Series debut, where she eliminated all four members of her opposing team, including the WWE Women's Champion at the time, Alundra Blaze. They would have had a really cool feud. It would have been absolutely badass. But unfortunately, Alundra Blaze left WWE before that could happen, and nothing really came out of it. In terms of movesets, she invented the package pile driver. Yep, there you go. She invented the package pile driver, which is rad as fuck, isn't it? Let's be honest. And her spinning back fist, I reckon, is one of my favourite moves in wrestling, because it's just punching someone in the face, but it's just done with such style. It is genuinely one of my favourite moves ever. So Aya Kong, number six, could easily, depending on my mood, have been higher, but she is tremendous.
Feeling the midday drag? Break free from the allergy blues with Aspire Allergy and Sinus. Our dedicated team understands that every moment matters, and allergies shouldn't steal your focus. Picture a day without the constant sneezing and congestion. At Aspire Allergy, we specialize in personalized allergy testing and advanced treatments, ensuring you stay on top of your game. Take charge of your productivity. Visit AspireAllergy.com to schedule an appointment today. Aspire Allergy, where your midday revival begins.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Number five, Sasha Banks at number five. I think all members of the Four Horsewomen of NXT are absolutely brilliant. There is no doubt in that whatsoever. And I think Sasha's great because she's as convincing as a heel, because she was a heel for the majority of her NXT run, as she is as a babyface, because she's currently a babyface on Raw now. And I think that all of her work, I mean, she does demonstrate a tendency to want to take crazy bumps quite a lot of the time, and I worry about that. You know, I don't want anyone to shorten their career for the sake of entertaining us all, but, you know, she really throws herself into it with such enthusiasm. Her feud with Bayley in particular in NXT is one of my favourite feuds of recent memory, and it certainly helped make Bayley into an absolute star. And their match at TakeOver Brooklyn, the first TakeOver Brooklyn, is, you can't argue, is one of the best matches in NXT memory. I think in NXT history, I think it's just a fantastic match, and one that's worth going back and watching again and again and again. And I remember watching it with my wife at the time, and both of us being absolutely blown away by how brilliant it was. And I think that her contests with Charlotte on the main roster, in particular being in her first ever Women's Hell in a Cell match, is again showing the difference in women's wrestling for even 5 years ago to what it is now, you know. And Sasha Banks is one of the reasons for that to happen. Again, she's not old, so she's going to be doing this for a fair few more years, and I think her legacy is really going to be stellar when it comes to the end of her career. And that leads us to number four. So number four is Charlotte Flair. I'll be honest, it was tricky to think where to place Charlotte and Sasha, and I'm going to explain my thinking about why Charlotte is slightly higher than Sasha, because I genuinely enjoy the work of both, as I enjoy the work of Becky Lynch and Bayley and the other women who were not part of that initial sort of four-girl clique in sort of Naomi. I think Naomi's great. I think Natalia's brilliant. So there's lots to be excited about on WWE's main rosters at the minute. The reason I've ranked Charlotte slightly higher than Sasha is it's nothing to do with the fact that she's a Flair and her family name. It's not that. But it's because of how good she is having come to wrestling later than most and not having had the indie experience that someone like Sasha has. Sasha had, you know, a fairly decent level of indie wrestling experience before she went to NXT, whereas Charlotte's wrestling experience was as a 13-year-old in about 2000 in WCW, coming to the aid of her dad. That was it. Then she went away, went to university, you know, did various other cool things, and then decided to become a wrestler, I think in 2012. So maybe in 2013. So if you think she's not had this extensive experience, she's not been training her entire life to get where she's got to, she's just managed to get there now, which is just by hard work and talent. I remember the first time I ever watched her on NXT and being told that she'd been wrestling for maybe 6-7 months at the time and thinking, oh God, she's very good. And just has an aura and a presence about her that just, it gives off the vibe of being a veteran when, you know, in reality she isn't. You know, she's just really good and is dedicated to what she chooses to do. As she's graduated to Raw and SmackDown, she's grown into being a top star as well. Not just for women's wrestling, but just overall. I think her overall, and again, being, you know, having her dad be who he is probably helps. But just her overall aura and the way she carries herself is the way of a superstar. And again, you know, I'm not just talking superstar in women's wrestling terms, I'm talking superstar to the level of someone like John Cena. Like, that's how she seems to carry herself, and I think that's brilliant. It's also worth noting that Charlotte and Sasha, little stat for you, hold the record for the longest women's match in WWE history. 34 minutes, that's from Roadblock in December 2016. And again, let's think about how women's wrestling has moved on and the perception of women in wrestling has moved on. A great little thing is, I think we talked about this when we were talking about TakeOver. If you look at Zelina, Andrade Cien Almas' manager, 10 years ago, she would have been a valet, and their whole storyline would have been based around romance or whatever. Now it's, she's smart, she's the clever one, she's his business manager, he needs her, he's got better because of her. That is just these little shifts that have made the difference in terms of the perception of women in wrestling as the industry has evolved and as the human race have evolved. You know, I think back to, I was thinking about, I was having to write something the other day about when I was at school and just about how sexist life was just in the late 80s, early 90s when I was a school kid compared to what life's like now for my daughter being at high school. So, you know, life has moved on and it's certainly for the better. Right, into the top three. Who do you think I've got? Make your guesses now. Really? You could not be more wrong. Number three. We're going to continue the NXT theme. It's Asuka. Now, I know Asuka hasn't debuted on the main rosters yet. The news broke last week about her relinquishing her NXT title. It's weird because the news broke and it was put out on WWE.com, which is great because I was at the show and I wanted to talk about it, but I'm not going to give any spoilers out because it's mean when they're taping television. And you've probably already heard me talk at length about how brilliant I thought Asuka and Ember Moon's match at TakeOver was. It felt like a throwback to the Japanese wrestling of the mid-1990s. It was wonderful to see. Absolutely wonderful to see. Asuka obviously plays her part in that. Ember Moon obviously plays her part in that as well. I think Ember's brilliant. The build-up to that match was tremendous too, though, because Asuka's character is one of my favourites in wrestling. She's not a face or a heel. She's just Asuka. Like, she's invented a new alignment. You can be face, heel, or Asuka, because that's what she is. She's got her evil little smile that she does, and without speaking loads and loads of English, she manages to convey her character effectively all the time. Her in-ring style reminds me of what I loved about Japanese wrestling in the 90s, but she's managed to combine that style with WWE style and with independent wrestling to create something that's really amazing and really sticks out. And with her now relinquishing the NXT title, I can only see big things for her. I can also only see big things for that NXT women's title as well, because it means someone else has to step up. But, you know, wherever she ends up, whether she ends up on Raw or SmackDown, it's going to be exciting and it's going to create a load more matches that I want to see. And again, the difference between this and the Divas era, when, you know, a Divas match would come on and no matter how hard people were trying, often it'd be like, okay, so we'll go make a cup of tea. Whereas now, as wrestling fans, we're getting to see women wrestle and do a fantastic job because they're just being told to wrestle. They're not having to be anything else. They're just the wrestlers, just like the guys are. And that's brilliant. With Asuka, if you can, go back and watch some of her work pre-WWE when she was called Kana. In Shimmer, see some really great stuff. And here's another little stat for you. Asuka in 2006, Asuka got poorly and she retired. She retired from wrestling. She was gone for just over a year and then came back and did great things. She's super into video games, apparently. One day I hope to have a conversation with her about video games. But yeah, she's just... I think her work is great. The fact that she worked most of that match with Ember Moon with a broken collarbone as well, just didn't mention it to anybody. It's the sort of thing that if a guy did it, it feels like we'd make more of a big deal out of it. And I don't think enough of a big deal has been made out of that whole, you worked with a broken collarbone, how crazy are you, Asuka. So yeah, I think Asuka's brilliant. And one of the reasons I think I like Asuka so much is when she first started appearing on NXT is my wife enjoyed her work so much, because my wife, you know, likes MMA and stuff like that and just likes to watch people being kicked really, really hard. And it turns out that's what Asuka's really, really good at doing. Okay, into the top two. Come on now. I reckon you've got number one. I don't know if you'll have number two. I mean, if you do get these right, at Jim Smallman, hashtag Tuesday Night Jaw. You know how it works. So then, number two is Sarah Del Rey. Not chosen because she's the sister of Lana Del Rey, whose music I genuinely enjoy, because I don't think they're related, but because Sarah Del Rey is tremendous. So while Sarah is now moulding wrestlers like Asuka, Ember Moon and the like at the WWE Performance Center, where she's the assistant head coach, her work on the independent scene makes her one of my favourite wrestlers of all time, male or female. Her work in Shimmer is wonderful, and she helped put Shimmer on the map massively. But I was first made aware of her in Shikara, which I love Shikara. It's King of Trios this weekend, isn't it, in Wolverhampton. If you can get along to that and support it, please do. But in Shikara, she started as a fan favourite and then became part of one of my favourite heel stables of all time, Bruderschaft des Kreuzes, BDK. She would then team up with Daisy Hayes and take on male tag teams. Always looking impressive, always picking up lots of wins. If you get a chance and you want to see Sarah Del Rey, I think her absolute peak, try and look up, I think Shikara have got an on-demand service, but look up Joshi Mania, the Shikara show from 2012. See her in action against several Japanese stars, including Aya Kong. Also, Sarah's Royal Butterfly finisher is one of my favourite moves ever. And I had a theory on Sarah Del Rey. I reckon if women's wrestling was as rightfully respected in, say, 2010 as it is now, I think Sarah would have been one of the biggest stars in the world, male or female. She was that good. It's a shame she's retired now, but she's passing on a legacy to everyone at the WWE Performance Center. And you know, you can tell by all the people who are coming up at the minute, doing a great job. So that was my number two. So you've got to have got the number one by now. If you've been listening to Tuesday Night Jaw for as long as you say you have, then you will know who number one is. You ready? Okay. Number one is Minami Toyota. Now, Toyota is one of the greatest of all time. Full stop. I've spoken before on the podcast about how Toyota is one of my all-time favourite wrestlers. Both Sarah Del Rey and Minami Toyota, easily in my top 10 favourite wrestlers of all time. And after seeing her on tapes that I received from Japan back in my training days in the late 90s, that's when she came into prominence in my mind. I I'd heard that she was good, and I'd seen that she got a lot of five-star matches, but it was the first time I saw her, I was just thinking, wow, brilliant, absolutely brilliant at her job. So good at everything that she's been involved in. I was gutted earlier this year. She appeared in the United Kingdom, and I was gutted to not get along to see her this year. I was delighted when she appeared in Chikara a couple of years back. In particular, she had a great match teaming with Mike Quackenbush against Claudio Castagnoli, Cesaro, and Sarah Del Rey, which is just even think about that match. Even if you never watched that match, just even think about how cool that match is in your head. It's very cool. So, Manami Toyota made her debut in 1987 at the age of 16. By 18, she was a huge star thanks to her work in the tag team of Tokyo Sweethearts. She's been in an astonishing 17 five-star matches, as officially rated by Dave Meltzer and Wrestling Observer, between 1991 and 1995. 17. I think, to put that into perspective, Kenta Kobashi was in maybe 20. And I think Masao was in maybe 22. I know, I quoted these numbers in my one of my top 10 lists recently. But just think about that for a second. That's insane, isn't it? 17 five-star matches from 91 to 95, including 2 five-star matches in the same night from the 1993 All Japan Women Tag League. Both the round robin match and the final match were in the same night. They were both 5 stars. 1995 was just a ridiculous year for her. Check out her singles matches in 1995 against Aya Kong, Kyoko Inoue, Mima Shimoda, and Akira Hokuto. All brilliant. All still stand up now, because sometimes matches can get given 5 stars. I think the example I use of this is a 5-star match is the Fantastics and the Sheepherders, which is a fun brawl, but it's not a 5-star match now. These matches are all still 5-star matches. They are wonderful. And their moveset. Good Lord, her moveset's tremendous. The Victory Star Drop, which is dangerous as anything. The Japanese Ocean Cyclone Suplex, the Japanese Ocean Bomb. Not only brilliantly named, but wonderful moves that you can only really imagine her doing as effectively as she does. And it's especially poignant, I think, to choose Toyota as my number one, because on November the 3rd this year, she's retiring. And I think we should all make a point of revisiting her work. Even if you go to YouTube, put in Manami Toyota top 10 moves or something like that. Even if you just see a little bit of what she was capable of in her career, even if just a few clips, you will really get an understanding of someone who has all the independent names that I've mentioned in this list. There is no doubt that Toyota had a massive influence over them. You know, when these women were training to be wrestlers, they will have become aware. Anyone who loves wrestling is always aware of the people who are brilliant. Like, anyone who's training to be a wrestler now will be aware of Okada and Omega and Will Ospreay and Zack Sabre Jr. And wrestlers like that. People will be aware of how talented these guys are, and they'll go and look them up. Even if, you know, you're a 14-year-old trying to find a Kazuchika Okada match for the first time, you know, there are people who are doing that. And it's the same in women's wrestling. Manami Toyota will have influenced nearly everybody over the course of the last 20, 30 years, just based on how brilliant everything that she did was. Sad I never got to see her in person myself. But I think that her legacy will certainly live on. And I think it's nice that this year they seem to be building to quite a big sort of retirement ceremony for her. I think that's certainly the right thing to be doing for someone who, you know, would have been wrestling for nearly 40 years this year. So, you know, if you get a chance to go and check out some of Manami Toyota's stuff, I heartily recommend that you do, because she is brilliant. Right. Anyway, I hope you like my top 10 list. I'd love to know yours. All right. Your top 10 female wrestlers, your top 10 women wrestlers of all time. Just let me know yours. Write them on your notes on your phone. Screenshot them. Tweet them to me. @JimSmallman. # Tuesday Night Jaw. Please support everything on the Distraction Pieces Network. That makes me very happy when you do that. It's great if you started listening to the Distraction Pieces Network through this podcast and then you moved on to all the other ones. That's super cool and awesome. Also, don't forget, you can go to jimsmallman.com/TNJ. You can point new people at this website. You can view a list of all the stuff that's been on this podcast so far. And you can buy the new t-shirts. in black and white while stocks last via that link. And you can also get tickets to the live podcast a week on Saturday, September the 9th at noon, King's Place in London. You can get tickets to that all via jimsmorman.com/TNJ. Obviously, check out progresswrestling.com, demand-progress.com as well. Next week, I'll be back. We'll give you a few instructions and a few pointers on what to do ahead of the live podcast on the 9th. Just a few little games for you to get involved with and some other cool stuff as well. I know what I've got planned. I'm so jet lagged. I don't know what's going on. Send me jet lag cures. Buy the merch. Come to the live podcast. And just keep supporting wrestling, because wrestling is the best. Right, I'll speak to you next week. Thanks, guys.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.